Hello and welcome to Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll examine a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the escalating violence by the brazen insurgent Islamist group Boko Haram in Nigeria, who kidnapped up to 300 schoolgirls and have now massacred villagers as they flocked to a town market. John Campbell, a former U.S. ambassador to Nigeria and author of Nigeria, Dancing on the Brink, joins us to discuss growing protests across Nigeria and whether the offer of a $300,000 reward will help find and rescue the schoolgirls who were kidnapped more than 3 weeks ago. Then we will discuss sanctions imposed on the head of South Sudan's Presidential Guard Force and the military leader of the rebel forces responsible for what Secretary of State Kerry calls unthinkable violence that has killed thousands and displaced more than a million people in the world's newest country. Author, filmmaker, and journalist Robert Young Pelton joins us to discuss the chances that the peace talks between South Sudan's president and the rebel leader scheduled for Friday in Ethiopia will end the tribal-based carnage and the violence he witnessed that is documented in this month's issue of the news magazine Vice and in a 40-minute documentary that goes up on Monday at vice.com. Then finally, we will speak with Stephen Schwartz, a senior fellow at the Samueli Institute and the editor of the daily web publication SchwartzReport.net. We will discuss his latest article at Explore, From One to the Many, the Social Implications of Non-Local Perception, and examine whether it is possible a mass of people having an individual but linked experience could have an effect when a great event such as the threat to the planet from global warming synchronizes the feelings of millions of people to achieve what facts and logic cannot. And joining us now is John Campbell, who's a Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies, a career Foreign Service officer, and a former U.S. ambassador to Nigeria. He was political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections, and his book, Nigeria Dancing on the Brink, is now in its second edition. Welcome to Background Briefing, Ambassador John Campbell.
Thank you so much. It's good to be with you.
And the latest from Nigeria, we've gone through this embarrassing situation with Malaysia's government handling over the disappearance of an airliner full of passengers. But what seems to be happening in Nigeria now with this international outrage and growing demonstrations in Nigeria itself, it seems to be exposing a government that's incredibly incompetent.
I quite agree. The notion that up to 300 girls could be kidnapped, disappear for now 3 weeks, is more or less breathtaking. I also think it's downright startling that there is no list of, a definitive list of those that were kidnapped, or at least I haven't seen a definitive list.
Well, also, President Goodluck Jonathan's wife has accused some of the women that have been demonstrating, the mothers, of being with Boko Haram and had them arrested. At least those reports
I mean, that's right. She is now saying that they were detained as opposed to arrested, which is right up there with how many angels can you go on the top of a pin. It, at the very least, would seem to be extraordinarily insensitive.
So is this just the division between the ruling elite and the people here at play? I mean, you've also, obviously, there is this fault line between the North and the South, between the Islamic North and the Christian South. But in general, it does seem to me that this is a country where most of the people are incredibly poor, and a handful of the political elite are extraordinarily rich, you know.
That's perfectly true. Of the girls who were kidnapped, some were Christian, some were Muslim. Some of the protesters have said that a reason why they're protesting is because the elites who really do run Nigeria send their own children abroad for schooling, and so don't give this particular kidnapping the attention that it deserves, and therefore they're going to keep protesting to ensure that it does.
Well, a while back I covered the story of the disappearing $30-odd billion that the head of Nigeria's central bank had discovered, and instead of finding the money and putting it back in the nation's treasury, they fired the head of the central bank. So
they did indeed.
That is beyond brazen. I mean, I know what the Boko Haram's doing is pretty brazen, and they've just apparently just raided a village in the middle of the Monday market day
right.
and massacred about 300 people and stole
right.
motorbikes and food, etc. That's a different form of being brazen, I guess. But let's deal with the first. Is the elite that brazen?
Nigeria, whether under the military or under a civilian government as it is now, has been fundamentally run for the benefit of a small elite that cooperates with each other, but also competes with each other. And essentially what they are after is access to the oil money, which is essentially controlled by the state.
But apparently not particularly well. It's a somewhat there's no transparency.
No transparency.
So where does the money go from then, from, say, from Shell, who's one of the biggest players there? Do we have any idea of the flow of money?
We have some idea. In other words, money is supposed to go from the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation, which is a Nigerian government-owned entity that, by joint venture or by joint agreement with the oil majors, actually pumps the oil out and sells it. Money is supposed to go from the Nigerian National Petroleum Corporation into the Treasury. Then the Treasury, by formula, distributes a percentage of it to the state and local governments and retains a little less than half of it for government operations. The flow of money from the federal government to the state governments, that's fairly transparent, and the amounts are posted fairly regularly on the Internet. But once it gets to the state governments, it more or less simply disappears. There, in other words, accountability at that level breaks down.
So are there, then, if in the north you have this insurgency, is it should it therefore be directed against its own state leaders? Are they pilfering the money and it's not getting to the people?
Well, it is directed against their own leaders. Boko Haram is quite murderous with respect to the Islamic establishment. It's attempted, for example, to assassinate the Sultan of Sokoto, who is the premier northern traditional ruler. The Boko Haram maintains that the traditional northern Islamic establishment has sold out to the predominantly Christian secular government of Goodluck Jonathan in Abuja. And therefore tries basically to kill them. So, yes, one of the things Boko Haram is an insurrection against the traditional establishment in the north.
Again, I'm speaking with Ambassador John Campbell, who's the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies, a career Foreign Service officer and a former U.S. ambassador to Nigeria. He was political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections, and his book, Nigeria Dancing on the Brink, is now in its second edition. So the fact that finally, after over 3 weeks since these girls were taken by this murderous group who've said that they want to sell them into slavery, the Nigerian police have offered a $300,000 reward for anyone who can help locate and rescue more than 200 of these girls that have been abducted. My understanding is that there's no mystery as to where they're being held. Is that true, that the camp, the Boko Haram camp, is well known?
I am skeptical. There are claims that where the girls are being held is well known. But I think I'm skeptical about it because I've never seen a specific description of where they are. And if, after all, it were known where they were, you could have things like aerial surveillance photographs and that kind of thing. And I haven't seen any. So I'm doubtful that the authorities actually do know where they are.
Well, then what assets are the U.S. and the British providing? I understood they weren't necessarily boots on the ground, but they were intelligence assets.
No, it's more complicated than that. The Nigerian government has said it would welcome offers of assistance. The U.S. government has responded by offering assistance such as intelligence or training. But the conversation has not moved beyond those kind of generalities. I understand from Nigerian media that an American team is supposed to go to Abuja in the next week or so for consultation with the Nigerians. In other words, we're a very long way from anything actually happening.
So what do the Nigerians have then in terms of special forces? They started a kind of SAS unit, didn't they?
The Nigerian military is badly overstretched. In addition to Boko Haram in the north, it's also involved with ethnic and religious conflict in the Middle Belt. It is said, again in the Nigerian media, that there are now troops stationed in something like 32 of the 36 different states, and it's the military basically who establish and keep order. So they're very, very overstretched.
But they've also run the country and looted it, haven't they? So did
in the past, yes. But military government ended in 1998.
But in that period, there were generals running the place, and I remember Sani Abacha was spectacularly corrupt.
He was.
But was there any trickle down in terms of military equipment? Like Gaddafi, for example, loved to buy weapons.
Yes, there was, and I think 15 years ago, the Nigerian military was probably better equipped and better placed than it is now. The civilian governments have not been particularly generous with the Nigerian military.
So who's going to step up to the plate here? Or are these girls, their fate is doomed?
Well, first of all, there are a great many of them. So I would suspect that there will be considerable differences in terms of what their fates are. I'd like to go back, though, to what I think is a very basic point, and that is how little we actually know. We don't know how many girls were kidnapped. We don't know where they are. There have been threats that they're going to be sold as brides. And that comes from Abubakar Shekau's video, but no place else. I find it altogether astonishing that you could secrete somewhere up to 300 girls in a landscape that looks a little bit like West Texas. In other words, there's no heavy forest canopy or anything of that sort. It's dry bush. So where do you keep that many girls?
Well, if above and beyond that, though, isn't what's happening in Nigeria itself, Ambassador John Campbell, a big backlash? This seems like this issue is perhaps becoming the focal point of a lot of other frustrations.
I think that's right. I think that's exactly right. And an interesting question it might be, why is it this particular issue? When 2 months ago there was a Boko Haram attack on a boarding school, and there, somewhere between 50 and 60 boys, roughly the age of 16, were all murdered by Boko Haram, and the girls were released and told to go home and find husbands. Well, why didn't that episode generate the same kind of interest and concern, both in Nigeria but also in the international community, that this one has?
just in closing, what do you think the explanation is?
Well, I think part of it may be that because the boys were murdered, it was over and done with. Whereas with the kidnapping, it's ongoing. I also think that the kidnapping has attracted the attention of Nigerian social media, and that's playing an important role in raising the profile of the event.
Well, Ambassador Campbell, I thank you very much for joining us here today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Again, I've been speaking with Ambassador John Campbell, who's the Ralph Bunche Senior Fellow for Africa Policy Studies, a career Foreign Service officer and a former U.S. Ambassador to Nigeria. He was political counselor at the U.S. Embassy in Pretoria during South Africa's first non-racial elections, and his book, Nigeria, Dancing on the Brink, is now in its second edition.